Welcome to the author commentary for Star Wars From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Here we go behind the scenes with contributors to discuss the creative process behind their stories. A word of caution before we start, these conversations may contain story spoilers. I'm Tom Holler, one of the Del Rey editors who worked on this project. Right now, I'm talking to Shannon Chakraborty, author of a story called But What Does He Eat? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So you had one of my favorite initial pitches because it was ever so simple and ever so direct. And it was something along the lines of, I want to write about the chef on Cloud City. It's like one of those ideas that immediately you're just like, okay, yes, write that right now because I need to be reading that right now. So how did you come up with or settle on like this idea for your story?
That was my first idea the moment I was invited to the project. I didn't actually want to write anything else. I love writing about cooking and culinary arts. And I have always wondered that. I mean, we cut out in the movie itself. We see the food, it's laid out. He gets his iconic line in. But who prepared that? And how did they feel about having to prepare some snacks and hors d'oeuvres for the most terrifying man in the galaxy? And I just, there was so much promise there in investigating who the person was behind all that.
Yeah, it's one of like the best sort of sight gags in the kind of whole movie, because you're just like, wait, somebody made food. Wait, are they really going to actually sit down and have like the worst family meal ever? Like this is, they're not just like, oh, arrest them and take them away. Like, no, they're really going to eat. And somebody put the dishes out, put the fine china out. So, but what's interesting about that is like, the story then is kind of the premise is a joke or is this fun sort of humorous thing. But what transpires in this story and the kinds of issues that you are dealing with are kind of anything but. So how did you kind of balance the inherent whimsy of your premise with then this like really meaty, really intense, the substantive themes then that you end up playing around with?
I try to do that with all my work, sort of investigate these very important themes while offering some humor so readers aren't, you know, entirely wallowing in despair. And I think that's something that Star Wars, and in particular, The Empire Strikes Back, does very well. I mean, think we have all these iconic one-liners in horrible circumstance, from Han saying, you know, I know, as he's lowered into carbonite, to C-3PO, taken apart and, you know, shouting all of his jokes. So that's something I wanted to continue with my stories. And I also think humor is a coping mechanism. It's something people do under tyrannical regimes all the time. And I wanted to kind of show that in these characters.
And one of the things that you're not, like, you don't really shy away from is this idea of really shining the spotlight on not just, like, people who are part of the Empire and people who are not Imperials, but the fundamental difference that, you know, the Empire is almost entirely human. And so what does that mean for characters in Star Wars who are not just not Imperial, but are non-human? And there's this incredible moment kind of in the middle of the story where when Toro, your main protagonist, and Gurz, her sous chef and her right hand, are working alone in this kitchen. And Gurz basically speaks it into existence and says, like, the reason it's only you and me in here is because is the point. We're both non-human, and the Empire thinks so lowly of us that they don't care. Like, they don't even care who's making their food. Is there any danger to who's making their food? Because they don't see us with any value. It's this like devastating stark moment that like all the humor and fun disappears for a little while. All the kind of the whimsy comes out of it. But I think it's really important to get at that because you're dealing with characters here who are as far away from being the heroes of Star Wars as I think you could possibly get in both cases. And it seemed like that was something you really wanted to explore in talking about, well, who cooks the food? Because that kind of character is going to be so adjacent to the story of the heroism and the evil that's going on, like, you know, on the marquee, right?
Exactly. And I wanted to do that for a number of reasons. One, from the first original movie itself, it's rather stark that we see these Imperials and they're all human. Then we get to the rebellion and it's this, you know, rambunctious group of diverse peoples and aliens. And that's something that then continues in the movies, in the expanded universe, and gets touched upon in some of the books I know. And I think that says a lot right there. I mean, what a universal theme for our own society as well, of these people who are, we are this one superior group and we view others as below us and inferior. And people tend to think nothing of the inferiors. They're the workforce. They're not people. They don't need to be thought about. And I think there is in my story, I tried to explore the fact that one, there are ways to then take advantage of that, but just how dehumanizing isn't the correct word, but how dehumanizing is that? That you are not even thought of as a threat, as a person, as some anybody willing to be given heart and soul to. And even speaking about normal characters, that was something I also wanted to do with this story because, you know, we have this giant galaxy-wide tyranny. And what is it like to just be a normal person? Because we don't have a lot of normal people. We have heroes. But I think regimes like that and systems like that don't operate if everyone's a hero. I don't think everyone is a hero. When at the end of the day, the idea of propaganda and fear and being gaslit and seeing not just not being gaslit, but seeing true horrors happen to your people, to your family, that's a fear that keeps people in line. And it's something we see in the real world. It's something we see in fiction all the time. And that's almost how people then learn to keep themselves in line. And I wanted to have a character who feels that, who does not have this hope, but is just a normal person trying to get through her day when Darth Vader, of all people, shows up. And her first instinct is for her family, for her world, for her friend. And she does what she has to survive, which is essentially to, and unfortunately, to accommodate this evil.
Yeah, and it's like, you're actually, your first moment with her and Darth Vader, don't obviously share the same space exactly, but like she sees Darth Vader. And as you were talking about, like she exists within the like structure of the Empire and its tyranny, but she doesn't even recognize Darth Vader, which is almost scarier than if your initial reaction is like what you imagine, like, you know, the recoiling of like, oh my God, it's Vader. Like he's here. She looks at him and you have this amazing description of Vader and his armor and this like presence. And she literally turns and just like, am I supposed to know who that guy is? And in some way, that's almost more terrifying because she knows the like she knows the legend of Darth Vader. She knows the stories of Darth Vader and the evil of Vader, but she actually can't even recognize him, you know, in the flesh would be wrong, but you know what I mean, like standing right in front of her, which just so further highlights like how you've created this normal non-heroic character, because all the heroes know who Darth Vader is, you know, everyone knows or they know what he looks like, and so actually, you know, I think we should talk about the end because, as you sort of mentioned, she's on the path to having a heroic moment. And I think when you start this story and you start reading it and you start to see what's going to be happening, you're like, oh, I can see this heroic path. And I would imagine, because it's a Star Wars story and Star Wars stories are generally heroic, that I know where this is going to go. I know what's going to happen. But then it does not happen at all. It is heartbreaking what ends up happening. It's gut-wrenching when you get to the final like half page and you realize that this is not going to take that heroic turn. And so you'd sort of started to get at that, but was that something that you like from the start, you knew like, you know what, we're going to get to the end and she's not going to do the thing. She's not going to do the heroic thing. Or was that something that kind of came out as you were exploring Toro more and the story was developing?
That was intentional from the first, just because I wanted to, I don't think we see a lot of characters in fiction who fail to rise to the heroic challenge. I mean, in science fiction and fantasy, we love the hero's journey. But I think it's worth investigating the ways in which sometimes people don't measure up, or it takes them a little long to measure up. And it's, you know, I think the idea of fantasy and fiction is to offer windows into the world, into our world and into possibilities. And it's okay sometimes to realize that sometimes people fail. There is hope in that because, of course, even as she's despairing and saying, you know, there are no more heroes anymore, we know there are. And I think that kind of allows the reader to feel even, okay, you know, when you hit bottom, you may not realize that there's sort of a silver lining right behind the door that you don't see.
Exactly. And I think too, you know, it follows so well with the development of Toro and the sort of themes you're working with, but also just like mechanically, when you're thinking about breaking down the scene, it's like, well, we all know that like Vader doesn't like eat poison and die or something like that. So
that too.
How do you then create something interesting and compelling for a reader who absolutely knows what's going to happen at the end of the end of this scene? And I think it was again, I was expecting her to be heroic, and even if she maybe fails at it, and I was just blown away by it. It's a great turn. We absolutely cannot finish this interview without talking about the way you write about food and cooking. You talked about at the start here that you, you know, it's something, it's a passion for you. I just fell in love with the way you wrote about the food and also the food you were writing about, even though it is fake and in space and fantastic and unfamiliar. It made me hungry reading this story. I'm like, I want to eat all of it. I don't know what any of it is. I might be allergic to half of it. Like, who knows? So tell me about, like, what is your process when you're writing about food in a story, like to create something evocative that's going to make someone be like, ooh, that sounds great. And then, like, is there an additional secret or an additional challenge when I need it to be enticing and sound good and delicious, but it also has to sound fantastic. And then thus by being fantastic, it's going to sound like unfamiliar and just like completely, does that create a challenge in making you relate to the food then the further you push it?
Oh, I love writing about food. I love culinary history. I recreate a lot of historical recipes in my free time, which is something that sort of allows me to get into the idea of fantastic ingredients. And I think writing about food, there's a lot of parts to come from it. First, food is a huge part of culture, and thus it's a huge part of world building. It's something, you know, is a great idea to take advantage of when you're writing fiction, especially when you're writing science fiction and fantasy. It should be enticing to all of the senses. You know, it's, you should smell it, hear the crackle, you know, see the sizzle. Like, there, you should play with all the senses. And even in writing about these, you know, wild alien foods, I tried to use techniques that would be somewhat familiar. That, so we see, you know, we hear the word tart, we hear whipping something into a roux. So you're using some common baking techniques that will be enough to trigger to the reader, oh, I can kind of see this in my head. You know, maybe this certain sweet meat we have, you know, humans have, but it's made of, you know, like ground almonds and jaggery or something like that. They have it with entirely different ingredients. Or dumplings, you know, come on. I genuinely believe if there were aliens, I mean, the idea of anything delicious encased in dough and fried and then covered in honey, there's no way that that wouldn't be just something everyone would enjoy.
Exactly. Everyone, I think you have a line like everyone in the galaxy likes dumplings or makes dumplings, which is true, probably. It is definitely true. So then I guess that leads to like the pretty natural question of like, if you were indeed forced to cook food for Darth Vader, assuming he eats, which we still kind of don't know, what would you cook? What would you make it? Would you make it dumplings? Like, is that the answer actually?
You know, I'm torn between, yes, I would make him dumplings. I think that's a peace offering. Or just looking at him. I mean, when I first started to write the scene, I was like, but does he eat? He has, you know, a metal face mask on his face. You know, do you serve him soup? Like a straw? Like, what would you do that wouldn't, you know, horribly offend him? You know, would it get stuck in sort of his mechanical gears? Like, I think there's a lot to go wrong there. So yes, maybe some dumplings, even if they just look pretty. That was, you know, that was one of the things my character says to Lando, like, you know, I'll just try to impress him, exactly. Make him look fancy.
Hopefully she did. It sounds like they decided to stay to eat. So maybe Vader was like, you know what? We don't need to get right to the carbonite chamber. We can, you know, get a little food. And it's such a great story. And you started again with what is a great joke and a bit of whimsy, but you created such, an indelible story about the sort of the normal people in Star Wars who are at the margin of every story. And you brought Toro into it just wonderfully. It's a great story. And again, it makes me hungry every single time. So thank you. Thank you for writing it. Thank you for joining the author family for Star Wars. And thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you everyone for listening. You can read But What Does He Eat? And all the other stories in From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, which is available right now from all your favorite booksellers in print, ebook, and audio download. Thank you. And may the Force be with you.